My name's Natasha Steele, and this is the Brighton Business Show from Radio Reverb. We're broadcasting on 97.2 FM and direct from the open market. And you can listen in on digital, online, and on podcast, Mixcloud, Audioboom, Podomatic, and Spotify. So coming up in the next hour, we have an interview with three people dedicated to promoting artistic enterprise in the city. Jan Burgess from Soul Design Collective and Sharon Whiting from 35 North Gallery will be in the studio. Artists Open Houses director Judy Stevens joins us, along with textile designer Jahan Bowden-Spears. The novel food business and a stress-busting practice competing in the Business Show Elevator on Going Up. And we'll round up some of the business news and events from across Brighton and Hove. So that's coming up in the next hour on the Business Show. But kicking things off today, we've got two people from Brighton's very busy artistic community. We've got Jan Burgess, who's the founder of Soul Design Collective, and Sharon Whiting from 35 North Gallery. And welcome, both of you. And today we're looking at the difficulties artists face in commercialising their work and finding out if there are ways to do it better or ways to do it if you've never done it before. So, Jan, welcome to the Reverb Studio.
Thank you.
And let's start with Soul Design Collective, because it's a very interesting initiative you set up a little time ago, I think, and to help promote artists' work. And what is the thinking behind the collective?
Okay, so for many years I've always been fascinated by art, although I'm not an artist myself. My background's very much more commercial and business orientated. But having so many friends that work in the artistic world, I was very aware that they struggled, perhaps, with getting their work very visible, or even just some of the very basic business skills that any small business owner needs to have to make a success. And as a consequence, they were compromising their creativity. Either they were having to take second jobs, or they were perhaps maybe not being as creative as they could be because their time was being sucked up by doing the day-to-day admin that's needed. So yeah. I decided to set up Soul Design Collective to support artists in really learning some of the basic business skills that can actually fast track them into helping them be more creative more of the time. And there's loads of thinking behind doing what you're really good at 80% of the time and then doing some of the support work around it 20% of the time. But in reality, with any small business, invariably they end up reversing that and actually just doing what they're really good at 20% of the time, which makes it terribly difficult to be a viable business. So the whole principle behind what I do is to actually try and help artists to create more resilience in their business by just giving them information and access to subject matter experts in basic business skills so that they can make informed decisions about what they need to move their business forward.
Brilliant. And Sharon, I'm guessing your gallery is at 35 North Street, is that right?
It's 35 North Road, actually.
North Road, sorry.
Yep, it is.
And how did you get started, and what were some of the challenges you had as a new business?
Well, we started off having an open house. We did that for 15 years, and so that was a real kind of good training ground for what we now do. My husband, John, is an artist. I'm not. I have a background in PR, which means I have more of the business side of things. And after 15 years of open house, we were really ready to take things on to the next stage. We wanted to be able to offer a forum, a space within Brighton where artists could show their work. There aren't that many. Surprisingly, there are open houses, but there aren't that many galleries in Brighton. And there were a lot of naysayers who told us we'd never last. Galleries never last, they said. Mm-hmm. So we had very clear criteria for making it work. So we both still do our day jobs, which means that we don't have to be 100% commercial. We can show the work of artists whose work we really love without putting pressure on them to sell. Mm-hmm. We don't need to sell in order to keep the gallery going.
So it's a venture of love as well as...
It is a venture of love. It is a venture of love. And, you know, sometimes we have commercially successful exhibitions and sometimes we don't. But that's, from our point of view, the success comes from seeing an artist put on a solo show. Most of them have never had a solo show before.
So it's really experimental what you do.
It's very experimental. Because it's ours, we have the freedom to show whatever we like. and to work with people who we really like. And like Jan said, a lot of artists have to spend time thinking about stuff that they're not experienced in, that they don't particularly want to do. It's not their comfort zone. And we can take all of that away from them and just allow them to be creative, and we do their marketing, their PR, their social, etc., and just put on a great show.
Wow. So there are opportunities there, even if you're not quite ready for the commercialization, you can still perhaps find space, can't you?
I think so. And we start that with working with students. We have an educational outreach element to 35 North, which is to show students how to progress from their graduate degree shows to a more commercial show. So we run a competition with City College every year, mm-hmm. where six students win an exhibition. They have a group show and they have to curate it and invigilate it. And we work with them on the marketing and PR, and it really shows them the next step. And also with the university photography students.
And I wonder if you can just talk a little bit about the marketing and PR. What kinds of, maybe we can talk in detail about social media, because that's such a big topic. But in general terms, what kind of things might work? Maybe Jen, you can.
Yeah, so we've got a series of courses which actually give the artists the opportunity to talk to social media experts and learn some of the fundamentals about what the platforms are from a technical perspective, i.e. what platforms work for their particular audiences, and then what content needs to go on it. And one of the biggest things, obviously, at the moment is the use of film and video within the social media environment. And just for example, I was at one of the artists' open houses last weekend, and I took some very small bits of video footage, which I published through my own and Soul Design Collective social media channels. And the amount of views that those have had is in the thousands, whereas, you know, the open house is wonderful. It draws people to the open house. But in addition, that footage will be out there for a lot longer, and so it's an opportunity for the artist to be totally celebrated a lot longer after that particular show is closed. And so I think that's one of the beautiful things about the way that technology is able to enhance the reach of the artists and get their work very much visible now, and it's something that we're really trying to encourage.
Fantastic. Well, I'm just going to play a tune here, and we'll come back afterwards and find out a bit more about how to market your artistic business, or how to get started if you haven't even got off the ground in terms of commercialising your work. But here is Andy Warhol by David Bowie. This is the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb, and I'm Natasha Steele. We're looking at the ways artists can make a living from their work. And in the studio, I've got Jan Burgess from Soul Design Collective, Sharon Whiting from 35 North, a gallery on North Road. And Jan, we were just talking a little bit about social media and helping artists reach a wider audience. And obviously, different people have very different skill sets around technology. Has that been your experience with artists?
It is. It's quite scary to move into a new medium, and the learning curve can be quite painful. But the benefits so outweigh the disadvantages. And so a little bit of hand-holding and a little bit of celebration when they can start to see the results is really, really rewarding and encouraging for all concerned, for us as well. And so, so I think it really is the way to go. But I think one of the things we were talking about earlier is the fact that, you know, artists often have a very strong heart connection to their work. And so they feel very exposed when their work is then visible, whether it be at an artist's open house or in a gallery or even, you know, on social media. And so it's often dipping the toe in, get their work up on Instagram, get their work up on their own Facebook page, and start twittering about it. And those just a few little bits and pieces, that drip feed can really start giving them the encouragement they need to take some bigger steps.
Is that what you found as well, Sharon, with the artist you work with?
It certainly is. A case in point was an artist we worked with in October, an artist called Pip Adams, who came over from Canada to show with us. She's from Brighton, but she's living in Canada at the moment. She had no Twitter profile, no Instagram profile, and the hanging of her exhibition, I've never seen anyone so nervous and self-critical of work that was absolutely beautiful. But we spent time with her, and during the time that she was with us, we set up her Instagram, we set up her Twitter. And I think she was just astonished by the response that she got, because her work was so amazing, but artists are modest and they're nervous generally, and it's very exposing, as we were saying. So it was an absolute case in point that we watched her profile expand before her eyes, and I think that was very confidence inspiring for her.
Yeah, brilliant. And I mean, it strikes me that the very fact that you can send thousands of images across the world in the flick of a button, it is an extraordinary step change in reaching an audience for artists.
Oh, it is. And with my background in PR, it's been an extraordinary step forward. And it's quite democratic as well. Mm. Anybody can set that up. You don't have to have lots of money. Mm. You don't have to have a huge amount of experience. Although, as Jan said, the more I know that Sol Design run courses that really help people to understand these various mediums and make the most of them. Mm. But the artists we see, for example, Philippa Stanton, another Brighton-based artist who is a prolific Instagrammer, has built a huge business around that. She's absolutely fantastic, and there are people who are hanging out every day to see what she's going to post.
And people can blog about the process, can't they? And people love to read those sorts of things.
They do. We like to look into people's worlds and understand it a little bit better by really hearing about their personal experience. Yes.
The ones that, there are so many Brighton artists that do this terribly, terribly well. I mean, Jill Tattershall as well, from In Hove, Wolf at the Door. I love the stories that she tells around her work, and it is a joy. It's a joy. You get a little tiny bit of insight into the process of creation, but also an insight into her day-to-day world and how her cat impacts her creative process, and you know where she's hanging and where she's showing, and it's beautiful to see.
Oh, it sounds really lovely. So you were talking about having some courses that people can go on. What kind of skills are most important, do you think?
It's really difficult because so many people can be at a different stage in their business development. And I think that's really for the artist to decide what they feel maybe they need a little bit of help with. We run everything from doing reviews on pricing, to planning, to social media, the platforms, content marketing. I've been talking to a fabulous filmmaker today about doing some work on putting together how to film and photograph your work for the social media platforms. Mm. PR we're covering as well. So much. All of those little elements that can really just bolster the confidence and provide the information that's needed. So a big range of courses.
Fantastic. And what sort of work do you show at 35 North, Sharon?
We show a fairly eclectic mix. I mean, the full name of the gallery is 35 North Contemporary Fine Art, which I appreciate is quite a mouthful. So contemporary fine art really defines what we do. And that can be painting, photography, sculpture and ceramics. So at the moment, we're showing the work of multidisciplinary artist Perdita Sinclair, who is based in the Phoenix studios in Brighton, and it's sculpture and paintings. It's called Farewell Sea Pig. It's quite an extraordinary exhibition. I really recommend you to come and have a look if you have a chance.
Certainly will.
And then what we're having next is a real illustration of how artists can support each other. So I did a private view at our gallery about 18 months ago, perhaps 2 years ago. Two artists, an abstract painter, Alexander Johnson, and a photographer, John Brocklis, met, and Alexander asked John to take some photographs for him, and it sparked the most amazing process, which has resulted in an exhibition called Deanland, which is based around an ex-World War II airfield out in Sussex.
Goodness.
Alexander's father was a Spitfire pilot.
Wow.
He does these abstract paintings, and John has documented his painting year. They've created a book, and the foreword to the book has been written by Anthony Penrose, the son of war photographer Lee Miller. So it's wonderful to see how one tiny gallery in North Road has sparked these artistic connections.
Extraordinary creative inspiration.
Really, I feel really proud of what we've achieved in those terms.
I'm sure you do.
I think one of the things that's so beautiful about the city in which we live is the fact that collaboration is so often at the heart of everything that we do.
I agree.
And that's one of the things. What I'm trying to do is create an environment where the artists collaborate with the other service. I mean, it's a naff word, but it's like the subject matter expert, but people who have the information that they need to help them move forward. And it's all about collaboration, working together, and that's why we call it a collective. And there's so much more that we've got in the planning. We really want to try and work with 100 local artists this coming year. Wow. And work with the galleries so that we create those connections, work with the film studios, work with the radio studios, so that we actually have a forum, a connected forum, where the creatives can create, the galleries can show, the people can visit, and we can all start talking about it and absolutely celebrating what an amazing place we're lucky enough to live in.
Wow, that sounds wonderful.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, I wish I was an artist. So, where can we find the information about your business, Jill?
So the collective, we've got a website. So it's www.souldesigncollective.com. We're on Instagram and we're on Twitter and we're on Facebook. But anyone can just email me, jan@souldesigncollective.com, and I'm very happy to talk to people, grab a coffee, grab some cake and sit down and chat, whether it be at an artist's open house or I work out of Platform 9, Central Brighton, which is a great collaborative space as well. And, you know, we can celebrate the arts together.
Super. And Sharon, where can people find more about your gallery and what's going on there?
So the gallery is at 35 North Road, as we said, and typically we're open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, although sometimes expanded hours like during the festival. We have a website, www.35northgallery.com, and I'm always wanting to hear from new artists, artists who are from Brighton or further afield, who want to talk about the possibility of exhibitions, but also maybe just to find out a little bit more about the process, throw ideas around, etc. So like Jan, I'm very happy to be contacted via the gallery website.
Fantastic. Thanks ever so much for coming on and sharing your wonderful expertise. I'm sure that it'll be very useful to a lot of people out there who want to take their art a little bit further and maybe make a living from it if they're not doing so already. And Jan, before you go, I did ask you to choose a tune that inspired you in your work, which is a regular feature we have here on the business show. What did you choose and why?
So I chose Praise You by Fatboy Slim, partly because it is a true celebration. The whole music piece is a true celebration. It's also the 20th year of the anniversary for the release of the album on which this song is placed. And the other thing is that we played this at my wedding, and which the anniversary is coming up this week. So it is all about celebration. It's all about recognition and praise for things wonderful. And it just seemed absolutely fit that following the lovely invitation from yourselves, that it seemed the right one to play.
What a wonderful explanation. Thanks ever so much. Thank you very much for coming on, both
of you.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure.
And here's Fatboy Slim with Praise You. Was Praise You from Fatboy Slim. My name's Natasha Steele. This is the Brighton Business Show. And here is some news and events from around the city. Brighton & Hove has made a bid to become one of Channel 4's new creative hubs outside London. In April, the TV channel launched its strategy and plan to open 3 new creative hubs, including national headquarters, bringing 300 jobs to the region. The City Council worked with the local television sector on the bid, along with universities and colleges. And Councillor Alan Robbins, Chair of the Tourism, Development and Culture Committee, said Channel 4's move out of London presents an excellent opportunity for our city. Lisa Fairbank, Managing Director of Factory Films, said over the last 2 decades, more and more television and film production companies, not to mention online stars, have been creating shows that are seen not just on TV in this country, but all over the world from their bases in Brighton. A Brighton English literature student has won £10,000 to develop a book subscription service that uses literature to empower women. University of Sussex student Molly Masters won the annual Startup Sussex competition against 9 other finalists in a Dragon's Den style event. Books That Matter is a monthly subscription service delivering literature to your door, and each month members will receive at least one enlightening piece of literature on themes including gender, race, culture and class, as well as a gift by an independent female artist. Molly said, "I'm thrilled. It's completely overwhelming. Winning the prize means that I'll be ready to launch Books That Matter in September, which feels amazing." Well, good luck with that, Molly. I look forward to hearing more. 400 local businesses have already signed up to the Brighton and Hove Living Wage campaign, and the Chamber of Commerce is celebrating with tea or coffee and cake at Brewdog on Grand Parade on the 24th of May. If you're already paying the living wage, you can join the fun by taking the pledge. Do it now. Go to livingwagebrighton.co.uk. And if you're not a living wage employer, sort it out. Cheer your staff up with a pay rise, then make the pledge. Free tickets are available from Eventbrite or through the Chamber website. The event starts at 10 a.m. on the 24th of May and cakes are provided by Infinity Foods. And the South East's largest festival of jobs and skills for the digital and media and tech industries takes place in Brighton from the 5th to the 7th of June. Talent 2018 will showcase great career opportunities and is open to anyone working in digital. There are recruiting companies, there's a virtual reality demo studio, there's a keynote from Uber and lots of expert speakers. Phil Jones, who's Managing Director of Wired Sussex, said, "As a regional digital cluster, our goal should be nothing less than being the best place in the UK to attract and nurture the talent we need to grow and thrive."
The Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb. By making a donation.
We're a non-profit organisation run entirely by volunteers.
No matter how big or small the amount, your help is essential to keep us on air and independent.
Donate now. Click the yellow donate button at radioreverb.com.
And now it's time for Going Up. I've invited two business owners onto the show to tell us what they do. First, they'll do a 60-second elevator pitch. Then we'll have a chat to find out more. For anyone wondering what an elevator pitch is, imagine you're in a lift with an influential investor or a much sought-after client, and you have only 60 seconds to share your story. What do you say? So first into the lift is Harry Kimberley Bowen. Are you ready to go, Harry?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
Step into the lift and away you go.
In the UK alone, we're guilty for wasting 10 millions of tonnes of produce each and every year when 50% of this is still said to be edible. We throw away 1.4 million bananas each and every year, which costs the UK £80 million. And the reason for this is that they have slight bruises on their skin, despite being still beautiful on the inside. Farmers lose 37,000 tonnes of their wonky produce each and every year because supermarkets are dictating what makes it to shelf. This is enough produce to feed double the population of Sussex with their five a day for an entire year. So you may ask, what are the current juice brands doing to combat this issue or just raise consumer awareness? The truth is they're not as innocent as they may initially seem. This allowed me to set up Frugly. Frugly has one key aim, and this is to combat food waste head on in the UK by creating nutritious and sustainable juices whilst being affordable and equally as tasty as the current brands you find on shelf.
Fantastic.
Just under.
Well done. How was it in the elevator?
It was all right. Pressure was high, but it's a true reflection on really a real life scenario, and that's how long you have to grab the attention of buyers in the FMCG world. So
super. So Anna, are you ready to step into the elevator?
Yeah, ready. Hello, my name is Anna Goodwin at Stress Free Mums. I spent the last 5 years creating long-term stress solutions for mums. So typically I work with mums aged 35 to 45 who feel frazzled and overwhelmed. I help them release stress and exhaustion from their body and their mind so they can have better relationships with their children and have more freedom, more energy and more fun at work and play. I just finished working with an overstretched and overstressed mum who, when we started working together, felt like the world was bubbling over in chaos and drama, reacting with outbursts of anger and feeling rather out of control. By the time we finished working together, she said she felt like she had more resilience and more energy to face her daily challenges. She would also... Oh, that's the end.
Well done. Good for stopping when you were meant to. Thanks ever so much, both of you. Great business ideas there from the very start, and you're already working in the sectors you've chosen. So fantastic to hear about them. Harry, beginning with you, you're having a very busy time of it. You're in the middle of finals at the University of Brighton. Your business is up and running and you've just won an innovation competition. How do you manage to fit us in?
Yeah, it's all a bit full on at the moment. So last year I was lucky enough to set up a baby food company along with five others in London called Piccolo. Piccolo saw raging success and we turned over £2 million in our first year of trading. So that kind of gave me the inspiration to work with an FMCG concept.
Hold on a minute, what's an FMCG?
Sorry, so that's a fast moving consumer good. So that's anything down to a can of baked beans to a can of Coke. So something that flies off the shelf quite quickly.
I see.
For a smaller margin. So this gave me the inspiration to set up my own business. And I also learned about food waste firsthand whilst working with this company and speaking to farmers. And I was really surprised to find that current brands on the market are doing nothing to combat food waste, which led me on to Frugly, which had a core mission really to tackle this head on. It just so happens that I am in my final exams at the moment, so it was all a bit hectic. But I was lucky enough to win the Santander funding competition towards the end of last week. So this has given me the kind of incentive and funding and knowledge to go on and set it up. So yeah, it's exciting.
Fantastic. And Anna, can you tell us a bit more about your background and how you got started with Stress-Free Mums?
Yeah, sure. Well, about 6-7 years ago, when I had two small children, a serious lack of sleep, as working as a secondary school teacher, and sort of lots of other contributing kind of effects, sort of things going on as well, I kind of lost the plot rather and started pressing the destruct button. And I became sort of rather angry, rather out of control. And so I started searching around for what it is that might be able to help. And I tried lots of different things. And I found what I do now, which is safe and gentle, but had a hugely sort of life-changing effect on me. And now I get to help lots of other mums in similar or different situations have those really, same sort of changes.
Yeah, really valuable thing to be doing because it's so difficult for people, isn't it? Balancing working lives and the lack of family support for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
All plays a big part in
it, love
it, doesn't it? Yeah, fantastic. And Harry, the food industry at the moment is very competitive. What have been the greatest challenges for you setting up your business?
Launching into the juice industry, I think, more so than any other industry within the kind of food space, I think it's fiercely competitive. So I feel the main thing I combat is that most people are saying, oh God, not another juice brand out there. And within that, I think my core mission of using fruit and veg, which would go to landfill, I think there's a stigma around that where people feel that this stuff isn't as tasty because it looks bad. And I want to break that stigma. And I think that's the hardest thing, is breaking that stigma amongst consumers because they're so fixed in their way. I feel like we're all guilty for picking around the fruit and veg aisle to pick behind the not so beautiful bananas to get the bunch. And I think we're all guilty for that. So I think my main issue setting up Frugly is to tackle that head on and actually change people's people are very set in their way in the UK, which is probably why we're the worst for food waste in the whole of Europe. So I feel like it's trying to break that stigma and actually prove to people that that stuff is still
so changing still hearts beautiful. And minds is the harder piece.
Exactly. And we are very set in our ways, I feel. So it's kind of doing that and coming up with innovative ways to put that across.
Brilliant. And have there been any barriers to you personally? Because, you know, you're still at university, you're quite young. Has that been a barrier at all, or are people open to...
Yeah, so the one thing I've learned in business today, although I'm still young, I know that the key reason behind failure of startups in the UK, 80% or something staggering, 80% of startups fail due to lack of funding or lack of planning. So I feel like before I actually... This is the initial stages of my launch. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to muster up as much funding as possible. I feel like that as a student living in my overdraft, I think that's the main issue that I will face, which is hence why I'm going to banks and investors at the moment to raise as much capital as possible to launch this.
So the Santander win is a big deal, because that tells a story in itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, Santander have been very helpful, and they're very helpful in the whole application phase, and giving me the money that they did to launch Frugly is great. I also won the O2 Think Big Award, which I collect on this coming Saturday.
Wow, so you're racking them up.
So that's a bit more money. So that's grants, and that's lovely of these companies to do that and feed that back to small businesses. Mm. Eventually, I will look for investment and give away part of my company. And that will then kind of take my business to the next level.
Sure, super. And Anna, coming back to the stress, obviously, yeah. Everybody who's ever set up a business has experienced that. But parents may not necessarily realise that what they're dealing with is stress. Mm. They might sort of think it's to do with the children or some other factor. How hard is it to recognise stress, and how can people do that?
It's a really good question, because it absolutely, when you're in it, you don't necessarily realise that you're in it. And for different people, it'll manifest in completely different ways. So for some people, it might feel like you're out of control. For other people, it might be that exhaustion. Others, anger. Others, feeling on the edge all the time. And when you've been in it for so long, to be able to kind of go, oh, actually, there is a different way out there. There is something I can do about that. Isn't necessarily something that we recognise.
Yeah, and for parents, I mean, do you work with dads as well as mums, or are we being strict about the mums?
No, it's just that I love working with mums. It's not only do we get to the root causes of what's going on, and, you know, allow them to shine as women, but I love that they then go home and they go back to their families, and they then sort of, because I teach them tools that they can use on themselves to empower them, they can then teach it to them, their families. Mm. And I love the stories that come home around being able to help their own children. Mm. And that idea of helping mums to then help themselves to then transform their families.
Absolutely.
I love it.
That's fantastic. What lovely work to be doing. How valuable. And if people want to find out more about Stress-Free Mums, what should they do?
So I'd like to offer the listeners a free 20-minute call where we can explore whether we can create that more freedom, more energy and more fun for them. So if they wanted to go to my website at stressfreemums.co.uk, then we can see whether we can work together and go from there.
That's great. So nice offer there from Anna Godwin from Stress Free Mums. And how about you, Harry? Where can people find out more about Frugly, whether they're investors looking to have a share of your business, or people looking for ugly fruit?
Best place to find me is across all social media platforms. So at the same at across all of them. So it's just at Frugly Juice. That's Frugly Juice. So yeah, just to send me a message on there and we can have meetings. I'm meeting all sorts of interesting people at the moment.
It's a great name as well, and you've got a very nice logo.
Thank you very much. So just drop me a message and we can have a chat.
Super. Well, thanks ever so much for coming on the show today, Harry Kimberly Bowen of Frugly Juice and Anna Goodwin of Stress Free Mums.
Thank you
very much.
The Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb. There is a repeat.
and it just goes on.
Download and listen back to all our best bits. Search for Radio Reverb on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Whatever you're into, we've got it. Listen back to all our shows online, anytime, anywhere. Now playing at RadioReverb.com.
And it just goes on.
So, my final guests on the Brighton Business Show are Judy Stevens, Director of Artists Open Houses, and Jahan Bowden-Spears, who has an open house. Welcome to Radio Reverb, ladies.
Hello.
Hi, Natasha.
Hi. I love open houses. It's a wonderful opportunity to get to really get to know the city and the people, and most importantly, the work and ideas. They're just amazing, and the whole thing is totally inspiring. Judy, you've been Festival Director of Artists Open Houses for a number of years, and you're also a printmaker in your own right. But the concept goes back decades. Can you tell us about
that? Well, it actually started probably around 35 years ago. It was just one artist in Five Ways, Ned Hoskins, who had the idea to, instead of showing his work in a gallery, to open his house so people could see how work looked in a domestic space, and invited the public into his house. And at that point, it was really just part of Brighton Festival. Brighton Festival then was a really tiny little festival, and a few other houses in Five Ways also opened up, following Ned's example. And over the next few years, more trails opened in other areas of the city. After a while, the festival and the fringe split, and artists open houses went off into the fringe. And but we started Artists Open Houses as a festival in its own right 15 years ago, and so it's got its own identity now, and much easier for people to find out where all the houses are in all the different areas of the city.
Absolutely. And Jahan, you're a textile designer, and you also run an agency for artists. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So where did it all start for you?
Well, interestingly, I think it's a lot of my career began with open houses. It's really important, I think, not to underestimate how important they are, not only within the city, but within individuals' lives. And for me, I first took part in an open house in 1996 as an art graduate, and it's had a huge impact on my career for a number of reasons.
Fantastic. And how, in what ways has your career developed as a result of open houses? Can you just give us a little bit of that backstory?
Yes, yes, of course. I think initially it showed me that there was a market for my work, which was of interest to people in galleries and also in industry. There's a lot of industry people who actually visit open houses. Mm-hmm. And it
so if you could just describe your work first of all, so we can get a sense of
Yes, of course. Thank you. The medium that I work in is paper collage, often with embroidery. And the work that I've done is often using words and a lot of pattern, as I'm a textile designer, and has been applied to everything from wrapping paper to art prints and also one-off pieces, embroidered wall hangings. It's very colourful, it's very delicate, very rich, a lot of detail.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked on the website, it really is beautiful work. And you were talking about how the open house scheme really helped you reach your market in a way. I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about that side of things, Judy. Who are the buyers? Who comes along to the open houses?
Yeah, well, we have an annual audience of around 200,000.
Visitors to the open houses.
Exactly.
Goodness
yes,
gracious.
Yes, yeah, it's hugely popular. A few years ago we were funded to do an economic impact study, and we discovered that probably around 40% of the visitors come from outside the city, and of which probably 10% come from London and other areas outside the region, outside Sussex and Kent. So yeah, all sorts of people come, and I think it's a really big attraction to the city, along with the festival and the fringe, that brings people from all around from further afield, even quite a lot of people from Europe.
Cool. And we were talking earlier in the show about the challenges of making money from artistic works, and obviously there's quite a challenge to meet the sort of time investment with a cash return, if you like to reduce it to that basic level. Would you say open houses is a genuine opportunity to sell work rather than just a nice thing
yes,
to do?
Yes, definitely.
And in fact, within the same study that we carried out, we asked artists to give us an idea of their turnover, and it's around £1 million that's brought in for an artist sales work during a festival. Yeah,
directly from the opening. Yeah. Wow. And Jehan, can you give us some examples of the kinds of business you attracted directly through the open house? Can you sort of
I mean, as well as private commissions for my artwork, for, you know, to private clients for their homes, it's also attracted commissions from industry. It also provided me with the first opportunity to exhibit my work at a trade fair. Mm-hmm. Understanding that there was a market for the work, but the open houses are only open 1 month of the year, it inspired me to set up an all year round online gallery. And I think also one of the very key things is that it gave me the realization that I'm not only a visual person who makes my own work, but I love the conversation around other artists' work. So it's helped set me up as an artist agent.
It's a wonderful sort of networking opportunity for artists to meet other artists and for the general public, as well as more professional art buyers, to experience that work up close and really get to know the process, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Is having those conversations an important part of what you do?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, the response to images is everything, and that's ultimately what is something that will lead to a sale, which will keep an artist in, you know, in their occupation, or hopefully how they earn their living. So it's absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's something. There's something really important about the audience coming face to face with the artist, actually buying work directly from the artist, making that personal contact, maybe learning something about how the work's actually made, and that can be quite inspirational as well, and lead on to their maybe developing their own creativity in different areas. And I think one of the other things that is really important for us is encouraging young artists, especially artists who've maybe just left college, and there's that really horrible gap, you know, when you've been surrounded by tutors and friends, and then you go out into the real world, and there's very little infrastructure and very little to help you pursue your career. So open houses, I think, it's a brilliant place for you know, we really like to encourage houses to invite young artists to exhibit with them, so they've got that deadline to work to, and plus they've got an audience who'll come and engage with their work and hopefully buy their work.
So it can be an artist at any level can be involved, really, can't they? It's very inclusive in that sense.
It's totally inclusive.
Yes, absolutely. It's important.
Yeah, definitely. And that's our ethos, that this year we've got quite a few venues for artists who've experienced periods of homelessness and who are in recovery from alcohol and drug issues, and also artists with mental health and or learning disabilities. So it's as well as schools and other venues. So yeah, it's partly about selling work and providing those opportunities for artists, but it's also about involving the whole community in the creative process.
So if someone wants to open their house next year, show their work, what should they do?
Well, they can look on our website, Artists Open Houses, aoh.org.uk, and we have two registration periods a year, because we have two festivals, one in May and one at Christmas, and they just register online, and so long as you live in the 01273 telephone area, you can open your house or your studio or any venue that you find. And and if you live outside the area, you can sign up. We've got an online facility. You can sign up as a guest artist, and then houses will looking for artists will use that facility. I don't know if you ever use that
I've known that. I'm aware of people who have. Yes.
Yeah, that's a really good way for, if you haven't got your own artist, to have a look for maybe jewellers or ceramicists or
And if anyone wants to join the trail and look at artists' work, how can they find out more?
So, in your trail, how would they? I mean, each trail operates separately, doesn't it? So you join a specific trail. Yes. Jehan's in Five Ways trail.
I think the different trails potentially have a different way that they structure that process. Certainly in Five Ways, I think you need to open once independently before you can become part of the Five Ways group.
So each trail has its own sort of rules to become part of.
I think they're all becoming a little more liberal and loosening up those. And because we kind of feel like, especially the first year that you're opening a house, to have that support of people who've been opening the house for years, encouraging you with deadlines and just letting you know all the things. There's a lot of things you really need to know when you're doing an open house.
Absolutely. Yeah, the work that goes on behind the scenes is phenomenal, really, isn't it?
So there is some support there if you want to do that.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, also, that's one of the wonderful things about AAOH, the Artists Open House Group, that the they provide a fantastic resource for new houses, which, you know, one of the key things is, you know, don't forget to prepare some food for the weekend, because you're likely to be very busy and have hundreds of visitors in your house, in your space. So, but that's, I think that's a wonderful resource that you offer, Judy. So
it, we have a little guide that was sent out to all houses, and things like, you know, that you have to think about that you are going to sell work. So you need a book to keep sales written down in. You need maybe a tin to keep your money in. You need a device that you can, so you can do online sales via your phone. There's lots of really necessary bits of information
that are available. And if you're not feeling very artistic yourself, but you want to go and look at what people are up to, where can people find out how to view the houses?
Well, we have brochures that are distributed throughout the city, but also have a look on our website. On the website, there's a section called events. So, and the events are usually houses that weekend will be offering workshops or other ways that you can get involved hands-on in open houses.
Okay, so you can join in as well.
Yes. In many houses some houses will have kind of, I don't know, music or performance or different sorts of artwork that you might like to go and or storytelling that you might like to go and listen to.
It sounds absolutely fantastic, and I'll be getting back out there on the trails this year. Thanks ever so much for coming into the studio, Judy and Jahan.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you to all my guests today, to Jan Burgess, to Sharon Whiting, Anna Goodwin, Harry Kimberley Bowen, Judy Stevens, and Jahan Bowden Spears. If you'd like to be featured on the business show, if you'd like to pitch your company, if you've got some interesting news or views or anything else you want to share with us, get in touch through the Radio Reverb website, www.radioreverb.com, or email me, natasha.steele@icloud.com, or find us on Twitter at Business Reverb or Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. That's all from me.